Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a CNN story on the Soul Factory. It's a, again, I hesitate to call it a church because even the pastor, and I hesitate to call him a pastor, let's just call him Duran. That's the name that he was given in the CNN story. Even Duran, who heads up this thing, says it's not the church, it's the un-church. So they've abandoned all pretense of being the church of anything resembling, say, worship service on Sunday morning. They do concert and they do drama. And when I say drama, I mean it's a theater production. And they got no problem with it. Do you? We're taking your questions and comments on the issue of drama in worship. It's not, I don't think it's an issue that we really have addressed in depth as many times as we've talked about worship and Sunday morning things here on Issues Etc. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. And our call-in numbers in the last hour here of the program, audio open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As time permits, a little bit later here in this hour, we're going to be hearing an NBC News story on the veils that are being worn by Muslim women in Great Britain, and it has become an issue all the way up to the office of Prime Minister Tony Blair on whether they even call it Londonabad or something like that, a section of London that is a Muslim section where women wear the burqa head to tail. And Tony Blair says it's not necessarily a good thing. Then a Fox News John Gibson commentary on the issue of these head coverings. And a little bit later, Hannity and Combs interview a woman, a Christian woman, who was suspended from British Airlines, where she was employed, for wearing a cross at work. It's audio open lines. Let's talk first here with Tim, who calls from St. Louis. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Pastor. I am calling back at your request.
All right. I cut you off. What did you have to say?
Well, it's not major, but the only reason I bring it up is because I've heard other people in other churches of the same type say this, and he'd kind of said in that report that, come as you want, wear your nose ring. He was suggesting that, some of these mainstream churches may not accept you and stuff. What are these churches that don't accept you?
That's a good question. That is a great question. Thank you for calling back, Tim. Yeah, it's kind of like the United Churches of Christ when they run these TV ads that say, if you're gay, they're not even going to let you in the door at those other churches, but we will. And if you're gay, they might ask you to leave those other churches. But we won't. We're like Jesus. We don't turn anyone away. And I watch these ads and I say to myself, where are these churches where people are coming and they're being like screened at the door? Where are these velvet rope churches that say, no, you can't come in? I don't know of any of them. In fact, drive around on a Sunday morning and you can't get yourself kicked out of a church. It's a straw man, isn't it? It's a straw man to say, those churches that still talk about sin and grace, they'll kick you out if you're gay. No, they won't. They'll call you to repent. Like everybody else there, like every other sinner, like me, like you, if they're doing what they should do. Now, if you go to the Soul Factory, who knows what they're going to do? I know, at least from the CNN story, you'll probably hear some rousing chanting, maybe some good concert music, and you'll see the pastor dress up as a clown and talk about how nasty it is that preachers ask you for an offering. And then I imagine that with his clown makeup on, he will ask you to support the ministry of the Soul Factory. They don't call that an offering, but it is odd, isn't it, that the churches that abandon all so-called traditions in the church haven't abandoned that one. No. Now, they may have abandoned the offering plate, but they will tell you where you can donate online or you can have direct withdrawal taken from your checking account every month. One way or the other, they still are asking for your money. That's one tradition that they all still embrace in one form or another. But he says he wants people to come and not be afraid to be spiritual and not to think that because they have their nose ring or their tattoo, God will still love you. And you can still be spiritual. No message of why God loves you, how he loves you. Jesus is pretty much missing there entirely. Apparently God is just in the business of, he just loves tattoos and nose rings. I do not know of a church that would turn you away for having a nose ring. I go to a big, not that I've been there lately, but I go to a big, very conservative and kind of hoity-toity church out in De Pere. And I've seen nose rings. I've seen tattoos. I don't happen to have any myself, but I can't imagine a church turning someone away for their nose ring or the tattoo. It's another straw man. Now, if you've got to create a straw man in order to argue your point, there's something wrong with your point. Next on Audio Open Lines, an NBC News story titled Lifting the Veil.
NBC News in depth tonight, Lifting the Veil. That's what some politicians in England are demanding of Muslim women, and it sparked an uproar. NBC's Jim Maceda tonight looks behind one case that's leaving communities and cultures at odds.
It's the latest cultural battleground pitting Muslims against non-Muslims in a nation known for its tolerance. Last month, this Muslim teacher was suspended after she refused a school board order to remove her full-face veil, or niqab. Officials said students couldn't hear her clearly. She took her case to court.
We Muslim women know that even with the veil on, we are 100% effective at our job.
But in an unprecedented move, the government has weighed in against the teacher and the veil, which allows only a slit to see through. First, Jack Straw, parliament member and former foreign secretary, said the veil blocked communication and asked women to remove it when visiting his offices. Then it was Prime Minister Tony Blair's turn.
It is a mark of separation, and that's why it makes other people from outside of the community feel uncomfortable.
These British Muslims disagree, saying they freely choose to cover their faces. It's their interpretation of the Quran.
We are in the same society. We don't want to break the society, but, you know, we ask them to follow our religion.
The controversy seen by many Muslims is just another salvo in an offensive against Islam. Among others, the banning of the headscarf in French public schools. The Danish satirical cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Pope Benedict's speech seeming to equate Islam and violence. And now this.
Put them together, and I can see that Muslims might well see it as a sort of a European assault on them.
The British government admits relations with Muslims suffered after last year's suicide bombings killed 52 in London, carried out by young British Muslims, and raising serious questions about the willingness of Muslims to integrate.
Britain has always prided itself on its multicultural approach, giving minorities the freedom to live as they choose. But even here, Britons increasingly are saying they're afraid their European values are under attack.
The veil, say government officials, creates distance and suspicion. But Islamic experts see it more as a symbol of what has gone wrong. Jim Maceda, NBC News, London.
All right, my question for you is this. America is trailing behind in terms of the percentage of population that are Muslims, but probably will catch up at some point with Western Europe and Great Britain. Should we forbid Muslim women to wear the burqa, the veil that covers everything but the eyes in the United States? See, what happened in Great Britain was they allowed a subculture to grow where people lived in Great Britain, but their culture was essentially the same as if they were living in Iran or in Turkey. A culture within a culture. And so what they've discovered is that this becomes the breeding ground for people who, in the words of the CNN piece, refuse to assimilate into society. And when they refuse to assimilate, they're probably more likely to, if they want, to do violence to society. So should we cut this off at the pass? And simply say, no burqas, no head-to-toe veils for Muslim women. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We have an in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I want to hear from you during Audio Open Lines this Tuesday, the 24th of October. Now, there is someone who has an opinion on this issue. John Gibson of Fox News has an opinion on the whole issue of the veils as they pertain to Muslims here in the United States.
So what do you think about the veil? It's quite a controversial subject in Europe right now. The Europeans have allowed a Muslim subculture to establish itself in great numbers. But nonetheless, European leaders are now trying to draw the line at the veil. Normally desperate to curry favor with the Muslim minority, the Italians are now making a tentative attempt to fight against creeping Sharia law by resisting the veil. The Italian Prime Minister says Muslim women shouldn't hide behind the veil. Same in Britain, where Tony Blair, on his way out of office for daring to offend Muslims with the war in Iraq, Blair says the veil is a mark of separation. Both will be denounced by Muslim groups for saying it, but it's true. My colleague Amy Kellogg, a Fox News correspondent in London, was telling me about trying to do a story about wearing the veil in Britain. She said she stood around on Edgware Road, the Muslim main street in Londonistan, waiting for a veil woman to walk by for a shot. She referred to it as the letterbox veil, the one where the only thing visible of the woman is her eyes through a narrow letterbox slit in the veil. That is clearly a sign of separation, clearly a sign of wanting to avoid assimilating in the Western culture, whether it's here or Britain or Italy, and it is clearly a sign of a subculture that wants to establish its own rules, separate and apart. Another way of saying that is the veil is a sign of the Muslim subculture wanting Sharia law, religious law which supersedes secular or common law in their communities. Tolerance is what we practice in the West, meaning we are tolerant of the religions and the customs of others, but we are also vigilant for signs they are among us and are intolerant of us and our customs and laws. Speaking as an American, no Sharia law, no veils. If you're here, be American. You don't have to conform. You just have to give up the urge to be separate and apart and unwilling to assimilate in our culture with us and like the rest of us. Not such a big deal.
All right, that's John Gibson's view on banning Muslim women from wearing veils. Those are his concerns. Ultimately, Sharia law over the law that the rest of us would obey in society. What's your opinion? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. He counsels at this point that we probably should not allow the subculture to, even in the case of women wearing veils, to hold Sharia law over the law that the rest of us are following here in the West and in the United States. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issues etc at kfuo.org. Steve is calling from his car. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Very well.
Great, great. Hey, a couple of thoughts. First off, I think there's a huge difference between Europe and the United States, and the basis of it is when after World War II, when many of these ethnic groups moved in from the Middle East as many times as laborers, they were segregated because European countries do not have a tradition of assimilation, unlike what we have in the United States and in Canada. So I think that's a big issue right there on the cultures in and of themselves don't know how to do assimilation.
Okay. Anything to add to that then?
Yeah. And the thing about the if they want to wear the veils in the United States, that's fine. But it goes back to the, like, IDs and such. You know, if we need to see a face for an ID, if an ID is required to get on an airplane, we need to see that. I don't think if they want to scream about separation of church and state, that's great. They don't need a passport. They don't need a driver's license. That's their decision. But, the practice of religion, that's great, but it was like having building codes on churches. There has to be reasonable standards by which we all live by.
Steve, thank you very much. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Steven's up next, calling from his car. Hi, Steven.
Howdy.
Hi.
I think we Christians ought to be very wary of some of these government attempts to suppress religious practice this way. If you look at where this whole attitude against the Muslims started in Europe, it was with the secularist French government, who saw little girls wearing scarves to school as being a threat to French culture. Now it's spreading to England, where they don't want the Muslims to wear the veils. You know, look, all it is a veil. It's a scarf, okay? I don't know that we really know what message, if any, is trying to be sent. I think we assume too much sometimes that, you know, oh, this means Sharia law is going to be introduced into our country and so forth. No, come on. It's a scarf. It's a veil. And the people, the secularists in Europe, that want to suppress religious expression this way aren't going to stop with the Muslims. And if it starts coming here, the people that want to do it here aren't going to stop with the Muslims either.
All right, Steven, thank you. That's a concern. Now, I hear both of these. And religious expression is religious expression. Regardless of what religion is being expressed. At least that's the way we think about it here in the United States. All religions are created equal, at least in a civic sense in their ability to, although in actual practice that doesn't always play itself out the way in its idealistic terms. But what if a woman does wear the law because she holds, wear the veil because she abides by Sharia law over the law that the rest of us are expected to keep? You know, when they wrote the Constitution for the new Iraqi democracy, one of the fatal flaws in that Constitution, at least according to the experts we've talked to here on Issues, etc., is a clause that said, well, whatever this Constitution says is fine and good, but Sharia law on the street will supersede anything this Constitution has to say, which means the Constitution isn't worth the paper it's written on. Sharia law will still hold sway. Can't happen in the United States, even in small pockets. All right, well, along the lines of Stephen's call, here's an interview with Hannity and Combs on Fox News with a woman who was suspended from her job with British Airways because she wore a cross, displayed it outside her uniform.
British Airways check-in worker Nadia Iweda says she was suspended from work without pay because she chose to wear her cross necklace outside her company uniform. Now, British Airways issued us this statement, which reads, in part, like many other airlines, British Airways simply operates a uniform policy which has been in place for many years and states that such items can be worn by its employees but underneath the uniform. British Airways would also like to stress that the employee in question has not been suspended. She has chosen to take voluntary unpaid leave. Joining us now in a Hannity and Combs exclusive is Nadia Iweda and her attorney from the Center for Judeo-Christian Law and Ethics, Paul Diamond. All right, why don't you tell this story? They did not fire you.
No, they haven't. They haven't fired me as such. It started last May. When they sent us on a training day, all the staff went on a training day for diversity and dignity at work, harassment and bullying.
Yeah, we had one here, so I wouldn't harass him anymore. But
no.
All seriousness. Go ahead.
So anyway, so we were encouraged to learn about each other's religions and cultural backgrounds, to integrate, to understand each other, to give a better service to our passengers. And I reported to duty the following day. I was asked to remove my cross because it did not conform to uniform standards. They classified it as jewelry. I then explained that my cross is important to me because it symbolizes my Christian faith, and I would like to have the opportunity to wear it, to display it, for people to know that I'm a Christian. My allocation duty manager was not happy with that, and the CSM, customer services manager, explained that this is company policy and it does not conform to uniform standards.
You know what's, Nadia, what's so stunning to me is many people wear crosses.
That's correct.
Star of David. You know, it's such a small thing. I'm looking, your cross was not that big.
No.
And I'm thinking, there comes a point where these policies are absurd. So you cannot wear it. So as a result, if you can't wear it, you're not going to go to work. This is a principal issue for you.
I can wear it. I'm very welcome to come back to work.
Provided, you can wear it where you want to wear it.
But I have to have it hidden under my cravat or underneath my
uniform. But you refuse to do that.
I'm refusing to do that in principle because it has become an issue. If my colleagues who are of a Muslim faith are allowed to wear their hijab when it clearly states in the Quran that they are not, they're not obliged to wear it. It's not obligatory. And also for my other colleagues, Hindus, who wear turbans and bangles, I would like to say that the uniform standards booklet has been adjusted to accommodate the other religions.
So all those things have happened.
Paul, do you have any doubt that a mezuzah would be handled the same way?
I think it probably would. I mean, I think it's a wider problem. This is just an example of a general hostility that's developing.
But it's not just anti-Christian, because a mezuzah or any piece of jewelry.
Well, it's Judeo-Christian. That's the point. It's hostility to Judeo-Christian values. And we have it in employment rights. Christians, in particular, denied employment rights, less so Jews because of guilt factors.
Look, I think it's silly, but if a Muslim had a star and crescent on a chain, wouldn't that be the same thing?
That wouldn't at all. I mean, there's actually great protection, almost promotion of Islamic rights. And,
no, but the point they would also say you got to wear that underneath a cravat. They would say the same thing to any piece of jewelry like that, regardless of the religion.
The answer would be, as far as I can gather, BA's argument, which I can't actually comment too much about, it would seem to be the more extravagant the religious item and dress is, the more permissible it is, which is obviously rather nonsense.
Well, they're claiming that as long as it's a piece of jewelry on a chain, regardless of religion, if that's what it is, it's got to be worn under the cravat. That's what they're saying. That applies to every piece of jewelry under the chain.
What isn't acceptable is for a secular body to say, we know your religion and we're going to tell you what Islam means and tell you what Christianity means. And if you excuse the pun, but talking generally, not just this case, you can have a uniform, i.e. consistent uniform policy. What you can't say is, well, we have preferred groups and less preferred groups. And I'm talking in general, and this is actually a phenomenon throughout whole of the
I'm not defending them. I'm saying their position is it's the chain and the jewelry regardless of religion. What do you want out of this? What do you want to achieve?
Well, I understand perfectly well that they've classified the chain and the jewelry as a religious apparel, not acceptable.
Right.
But they must understand, being diversity and cultural awareness, that each religion and faith has its own way of expressing their faith.
What do you want? What do you want the end result to be?
Well, the end result would be, I would love British Airways to change their policy to allow Christians in their workforce to display their faith, be it the Star of David or be it the cross, because this symbolizes...
You don't want money, you want your job back as well?
Definitely. I love British Airways and I'm a good and conscientious employee. For the past 7 years, this has never come up.
Well, and there seems to be a double standard here, doesn't there?
No.
Which is often the case. Anyway, we wish you the best with your case. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Appreciate it.
All right, there's a story from Hannity and Combs. So if you oppose women of the Muslim religion wearing the head veil or the full body veil, the burqa, can you support Christians wearing a cross to work? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio. It's Audio Open Lines. We're coming up on a break, and we're happy to take your calls during the break and talk with you on the other side. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I think we've got enough time to get Pam in here, calling from her car. Pam, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks. This last segment you played happened in England, but closer to home here in St. Louis, one of our public school districts, trains anyone who works there in diversity, and this same sort of sentiment is taught. I was volunteered for a citizens committee and spent 8 hours in diversity training before we could begin our work, and we were told in print and verbally who the oppressors were in our society today and who the oppressed were.
All right, Pam, hang on a second. I'm going to keep you through the break here if you don't mind. And I want to hear the rest of this. This is very interesting because it was mentioned at the end of that Hannity and Combs piece that there's a double standard. That is, look, if the Muslim wants to wear the turban or whatever is the symbol in that particular culture, the veil may be a symbol of Islam, although I doubt that they'd be wearing little crescent moons. They can do that, but Christians can't wear the crosses. We'll be right back with more Audio Open Lines.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
It's never too early to begin teaching your kids or your grandkids the substance of the Christian faith. Are you looking for a children's book with real Christian scriptural substance? Hi, I'm Todd Wilkin. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is called The Apostles' Creed. It teaches the basics of the doctrine of the Trinity right at the level of your children or grandchildren. You can find The Apostles' Creed at either of the two Concordia Publishing House bookstores in the St. Louis area. One is on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, the other at 3558 South Jefferson in the city. The Issues, Etc. book of the month for October, The Apostles' Creed, is a great way to begin teaching your children the truths of the Christian faith. Visit either of those two locations, 3558 South Jefferson in the city, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Look for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Apostles' Creed.
Brontosaurus, a brilliant piece of engineering. Answers with Ken Ham, one of the builders of the new Creation Museum near the Cincinnati Airport. Well, Ken, I'm confused. I've heard you say on other programs that Brontosaurus never even existed, and now you're saying it was a brilliant piece of engineering.
Yeah, sounds confusing, but, you know, one of the world's foremost dinosaur experts, Dr. Robert Baker, still calls the Apatosaurus a Brontosaurus, since that was the first name given to the majority of its skeleton. But that aside, in an interview, Baker explained how these large sauropod dinosaurs were able to raise and lower their heads without worrying about their blood pressure. Now, according to Baker, he said that a pinhead brain needs very little blood supply and that large sauropods had very small brains. He's surprised at the obvious design in such creatures. In his own words, he stated, quote, "The remarkable thing about Brontosaurus, they're the only major dinosaur group that dumbed down in evolution. Their brains are smaller than their ancestor, dumber than animals before or since, but it's a brilliant piece of engineering," end of quote. Well, he's right about one thing. They were brilliantly designed. Dinosaurs were created on the day 6 of the creation week, along with the rest of the land animals. You know, had Baker started with Genesis, he wouldn't have been surprised about their brilliant engineering.
For some fascinating reading, read Ken Ham's booklet on the culture wars. It's available at AnswersRadio.com. It's free at AnswersRadio.com.
In Philippians chapter 1, Paul prays for the Philippians.
Professor Rick Neufer, coordinator of the Alternate Routes to Ordination at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
I am privileged to work with many older men who desire to serve the Lord in the ordained ministry. The Alternate Routes program provides a way in which experienced laymen, teachers, principals, DCEs, and other commissioned ministers can receive seminary training in a shorter period of time than in the Master of Divinity program. Although no degree is awarded in the Alternate Routes program, Alternate Routes students still serve a vicarage as part of their program and receive all the theological education they will need for ordination. The churches of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod are filled with people of all ages. Thus, the church needs pastors of all ages. Have you ever thought about the pastoral ministry but have said, "I am too old"? Think again.
Concordia Theological Seminary, www.ctsfw.edu.
In Philippians chapter 1, Paul prays for the Philippians that God, who began a good work in you, will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. What kind of work is God working out in you? Let's talk about Philippians chapter 1 next time on The Bible Study with Pastor Mark Hawkinson. The Bible Study, weekday mornings, 10:05.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Audio open lines. Pam's on the line. Pam, you were telling us before the break about the diversity training that you got as a volunteer in the St. Louis area for, I think, a public school. Finish your story, if you would.
Sure. It was a suburban public school district, and we spent 8 hours before we could get to the work of our citizens committee with the school in diversity training, and we were given all kinds of stories and lectures and information about how to be culturally sensitive and to be thinking about diversity. And I'll never forget the piece of paper I was given where they listed for us all of the types of people who are oppressed. And then in another column, who the people were who oppressed these people. And so you would see things like men are the oppressors, women are the oppressed, Christians are the oppressors, all other religions are the oppressed. Heterosexuals are the oppressors, all other sexuals are the oppressed. People who have no disabilities, the able-bodied, oppress all those who are disabled. And there, it just went on and on. There was category after category. White Anglo-Saxons oppress all other races and nationalities, and English-speaking people and those who don't speak English. And I found myself in probably six or seven categories as an oppressor.
You were the oppressor.
I was the oppressor.
Okay,
as
now
a white woman and Christian.
As far as you could tell after this diversity training, what was the intended bottom line of that, of those categories of oppressed and oppressors? What was that supposed to result in when you actually got to work doing your volunteer stuff?
Well, I think they really wanted us to have our eyes opened and to be more sensitive to who we were and to the differences in other people. And they said that this is training we got in 8 hours, that they spend 2 weeks training everyone that works in this school district. And I've had children in the school district, and a classroom at a middle school filled with Buddhist prayer flags, Buddha statues, yin-yang symbols, yoga instructions and positions. And when I asked, how is this allowed in a public school? This appears to me to be an expression of religion. Would you allow us to hang a crucifix in a classroom? They said, no, you don't understand. This is just cultural training. They're learning about China, and so they're learning about the Buddhist faith. But that was all year long. Even after they went through that unit, those things were there, and the teacher was a Buddhist. I mean, he professed that he was.
Now, that's interesting, Pam. Thank you very much. Golly, if I were an attorney, you know, I think it would be different if the teacher weren't a Buddhist. I think it would be somewhat different. But the fact that the teacher was a Buddhist and yet claimed to have all the symbolism in the classroom purely for cultural educational purposes seems to me to, what, stretch incredulity past the breaking point? It would if it were a Christian who said, I hang a crucifix, but it's just cultural stuff. That would also stretch incredulity for me. Okay, there's, I would call that an extreme example. It may not, I'm certainly not the example uniform to every case, but we come back to the question of, okay, then what religious expression, all of the things being equal, what religious expression should be allowed and what shouldn't be? I mean, think about it. Christians say, shouldn't we obey God rather than men? If there were a law in the United States that required us to sin, we would say, no, this is a case where we need to exercise civil and Christian disobedience to that law. There are very few cases where that actually occurs, but were it to occur, we would. And the Muslim might say, hey, I obey God rather than men, and so I observe Sharia law. Do you see a difference? Is it inconsistent for Christians to support banning Muslim women from wearing the body veil and favor Christians being able to wear crosses to work? Religious expression is religious expression. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issues@kfuo.org. Marie in Missouri writes this. When French law forbade Muslim girls from wearing their scarves to classes, Muslim parents withdrew their daughters from school. The girls' chances for an education, or at least for interaction with non-Muslims, was gone. It's true. If the Muslim parents pulled their kids out of school, maybe they didn't get an education, or maybe they got an education at the local Muslim school. And who knows what's being taught there, especially given the state of the Muslim culture, subculture in France. That could be a dangerous situation. Now, the French banned the headscarves because they saw them as a form of religious expression and as running counter to the French culture. They're all about culture over there and the preservation of their culture. They have ministers for culture. Their language is regulated. The French language, did you notice this? The French language is regulated by law. Grammar, syntax, everything by law in France because they view it as a cultural issue. Well, CNN had a recent story about Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. You may recognize the name because he's contemplating a run for the White House in 2008 or maybe afterwards. Now, Mitt Romney is a professed Mormon, member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. My question for you, let's listen to this piece. Would you vote for a Mormon for president in 2008 or after? Your phone calls, your email after we hear this report, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues etc at kfuo.org. Here's the CNN story on Mitt Romney and his possible run in 2008 for the White House.
It might feel like he's running for president in 2008, but Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney insists he's just doing his homework.
That's not a passive activity. To keep one's option open, you have to be seen in the early primary states. You need to put together a fundraising network and see that you have individuals who might support you if you decided to get into it.
From New Hampshire to Iowa to South Carolina, Romney, who's chairman of the Republican Governors Association, has been raising money and his profile.
And the more he's out about traveling for candidates, the more people see him, the more people think this man is a leader for the future.
But critics say the process of becoming that leader and the effort to win the hearts of evangelicals is pushing Romney away from the more moderate candidate that he was 4 years ago.
He has played around with the choice in life issue.
Jeff Santos is a liberal Boston radio talk show host.
Taking that hard right turn and somebody thinking that he's believable on that part. I have a hard time with that.
Romney admits he now takes a harder line against abortion than he did in his gubernatorial campaign. But he disagrees he's toughened his stance against same-sex marriage.
I'm in the same position I was before.
He shared that position with evangelicals in Boston at a recent nationally televised rally against same-sex marriage.
Every child deserves a mother and a father.
A warm welcome from a key voting bloc. But political analysts say some may ultimately be reluctant to embrace him as a presidential candidate, because he's a Mormon.
There are people in his own party, in his own conservative base, the social conservatives, evangelical conservatives, some of whom see the Mormonism as an errant, a deviation from the Word of God.
Romney says everyone is on the same page when it comes to values, and that is what motivates voters. Republican advisor Ron Kaufman agrees.
People are voting for the commander-in-chief. I think not the pastor-in-chief.
Political analysts say the Mormon factor is difficult to measure, but it has been getting more attention as Romney has been quietly rising to the top tier of potential presidential candidates. If the spotlight intensifies, some say the issue will only get bigger. Dan Lothian, CNN, Boston.
Okay, would you vote for a Mormon for president? They talked about the Mormon factor among evangelicals who vote. David Gergen was quoted there. How big is the Mormon factor for you as a voter? Would you vote for a Mormon for president? Mitt Romney is the example on hand. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. The liberal talk show host that they talked to in that CNN piece was very skeptical about Romney's newly found pro-life position. He says it was a hard turn to the right and he has a hard time buying it. Well, my second question for you is, do you trust Mitt Romney on the life issue, given the fact that he has changed his position on abortion in the last few years, some might say the closer he got to a run for the White House? Issues ETC at KFUO.org or 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I ask you now because if he actually is a viable candidate in 2008, you might have to make that decision in 2 years. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is for kids. That doesn't mean it isn't for adults. You might have to read it to your kids. It's called The Apostles' Creed. It's a picture book that is based around the basic teachings of the Apostles' Creed, namely the doctrine of the Trinity. The book is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look for The Apostles' Creed on our homepage. You can also call Concordia Publishing House and ask for the book, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The book of the month for October here on Issues Etc. is called The Apostles' Creed. Tomorrow on the program, by the way, Dr. Peter Scare is going to join us. We're going to talk about three women saints, female saints of the New Testament, Dorcas, Lydia, and Phoebe. What do we know about them? We'll find out tomorrow with Dr. Peter Scare of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Back to the phones, to David, who calls from his car. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hello.
You ask whether we'd vote for a Mormon or not. I guess, compared to what? If I had to vote for a Mormon compared to George Bush, no way. But if I had to vote for a Mormon compared to Hillary Clinton, you bet. So I think it depends on what the person believes and has believed. And as far as his pro-life position, the question is, has he, like Mr. Bush, had a change of life that would indicate that it might be true, or is it just a political calculation?
So you'd have to determine whether or not it's a sincere change or whether he's simply flipping on the life issue in order to garner the support of the Republican base.
I couldn't have said any better.
All right. Thank you very much, David. Okay, what about the rest of you? He won't be running against George W. Bush. That's not going to happen because that's illegal. George W. Bush can't run again. Now, in the primary, he'll be running against a bunch of other Republicans. But let's say for the sake of argument that he rises to the top during the primary season. You never know what happens in that primary season. And he becomes the candidate for president in 2008 from the Republican Party. Mitt Romney, governor of Massachusetts, Mormon, and now newly a pro-life candidate. Does his religious affiliation influence how you vote? Especially given the fact that he's a Mormon. David Gergen, in that CNN piece, says there are going to be a lot of evangelicals who will balk at voting for a Mormon for president. Are you among them or not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Frank calls from Las Vegas. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Pastor. Yeah, my take on this is that we're dealing with the left-hand kingdom, and you look at the candidates, irrespective of their particular religious or theological beliefs, and pick the candidate that seems to be the best in terms of their positions on economics and things of this nature. And of course, you take into consideration the life issue, abortion and everything else surrounding that. And you're never positive in the left-hand kingdom whether or not somebody is absolutely sincere, whether they intend to follow through with what they say, and so forth. But you do the best you can. And the fact that he's a Mormon, that doesn't thrill me. But you could look at a lot of evangelical Christians that seem to have very strange religious viewpoints in terms of the Bible's interpretation, like Pat Robertson and people of this nature that misinterpret what the word Israel means, and they think they attribute it to the modern state and the Mediterranean. And there's all sorts of strange things that come
in. Okay. No, I understand exactly what you're saying. That's Frank's thought on this. He says, look, you never can be sure of what you're getting when you're voting for somebody. You do the best you can. You exercise your best judgment. And as to the issue of whether Mitt Romney is a Mormon, hey, doesn't make that much difference. You really need to be concerned more about his views and his positions. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Betty in Lake St. Louis is on the line. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I heard one time that Martin Luther, who was very much for separation of church and state, made the comment that if he had to choose between a leader who was a very good Christian but was not that skilled in leadership role or skills, and between a heathen who was very skilled in leading in leadership, and that he would vote for the heathen. Is that true?
Oh, that's a good question. Now, it's among the many apocryphal sayings, or perhaps apocryphal sayings of Luther. I've tried to track that quote down, which is, it's usually called the Noble Turk quote from Luther. I've tried to, not intensely, but I've tried to track it down and find out where Luther is supposed to have said, I'd rather have, I think the way it's usually paraphrased, I'd rather have a smart Turk than a dumb Christian as a prince. Now, Luther said a lot of things, and some of them tongue-in-cheek. So I don't know whether he said it or not. I haven't been able to find it. Now, if anybody has the quote, I'd love to get it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying I haven't been able to find it. The principle that Luther is articulating there is, look, we want good leaders. They don't necessarily need to be godly. They just need to be good, because God has a different means by which he rules, as what our callers have already referred to, the left-hand kingdom. We need them to be good, not necessarily godly. And they can be one without the other. Thomas Jefferson, not a godly man by any stretch of the imagination. Not. But pretty darn good president. Bill writes this on the issue of Islam. Muslims should not even be allowed in the United States. He's hearkening to the issue of the veils. Their religion cannot allow any other religion to exist. Follow history on how they deal with any other religion in their countries and how they treat converts from Islam. It's not just the fundamentalists that want to kill and murder any other religions. And he ends his email by saying, I lived in Iran for 2 years in 1977 and 1978. I speak from experience. All right, Bill, thank you very much for the email. issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines. We've got a few minutes left here. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I don't see how you can consistently say that the Muslim, let's talk about the United States context. What they do in Great Britain is the Brits' business. But here in the United States, if we're going to maintain two things, one, as close to pure religious tolerance as we can muster, obviously with limits, and two, the separation of church and state that has to exist for democracy to exist. You cannot have a confusion as to who's telling you, who speaks with final authority. You cannot have a confusion where the law says, don't do this, and the cleric, be he a Muslim or Christian, says, no, you go ahead and do that. In order to maintain those two things, I do not see how we can consistently say no Muslim veils for women, obviously with limits. I mean, for example, if they want to get into a security area and they say, I'm wearing my veil, you can't violate the boundaries of my veil, then you don't come in because we can't search you. I'm sorry. That's no violation of religious expression. It's just you can't express it in here. So how could we consistently say no veils for Muslim women and then say, oh, but Christians ought to be able to display their crosses prominently wherever they please? Religious expression, in our context, religious expression is religious expression. Oh, talking about the confluence of religious expressions, the story about the Pope and his expression regarding Islam, he's had a few other things to say. At the end of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, the Pope had a few comments about the holiday and about Islam.
The Vatican issued its annual greeting to Muslims at the end of Ramadan today. The message is usually a routine affair, but it had special significance this year thanks to Muslim protests over Pope Benedict's recent remarks on Islam and violence. Today's statement urged Muslims to join Catholics in working to defeat terrorism, saying the credibility of both Christianity and Islam are at stake. NPR's Sylvia Pagioli reports from Rome.
The annual message comes at a time of tension between the two religions after Benedict's speech last month at Regensburg University in Germany, portions of which were seen as offensive by many in the Islamic world. For the first time, the heads of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue held a press conference to present the Ramadan message to the media. Council Secretary Archbishop Pierluigi Celata quoted from it directly.
Dialogo viene precisato nel messaggio che può essere talvolta arduo.
The particular circumstances that we have recently experienced together demonstrate clearly that, however arduous the path of authentic dialogue may be at times, it is more necessary than ever.
The message denounces the painful scourge of violence and terrorism. As Christian believers, it says, are we not the first to be called to offer our specific contribution to resolve this serious situation and these complex problems? And it adds, without a doubt, the credibility of our religions and also the credibility of our religious leaders and all believers is at stake. Following the uproar over his speech in Germany, Benedict has expressed regret several times, insisting he had been misunderstood. He also held an extraordinary meeting with ambassadors of Islamic countries to the Holy See and Muslim representatives in Italy. He will have another opportunity to improve Catholic-Muslim relations when he visits Turkey next month. Archbishop Cilata, a former Vatican envoy to Ankara, recently traveled to Turkey. He acknowledged that the Regensburg speech caused apprehension in Turkey and revived debate over remarks Ratzinger had made before becoming pope that Turkey should not become a part of the European Union.
Ormai l'episodio è stato inquadrato.
But now the misunderstanding, the incomprehension has been cleared up. We must move forward more courageously. This is absolutely urgent.
And the Archbishop added that Turkey is ready to accord the Pope the hospitality that is typical of Turkey and the Muslim world. Vatican officials are playing down concerns over the Pope's security during the four-day visit, but there is some worry that the dispute over the Pope's speech may overshadow the entire trip. And there is also a diplomatic problem with the Turks. One of the prime goals of this papacy is to overcome tensions with Orthodox Christians. And Benedict sees his encounter in Istanbul with Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, spiritual head of the world's Orthodox, as the main purpose of what the Vatican describes as a pastoral visit. The Turkish government, on the other hand, has invited the Pope to visit as a head of state and not as a religious leader. A diplomatic dispute that still has to be resolved. Silvio Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
Boy, this is confusing because, first of all, we need to note that the Pope's visit to Turkey is still on. I was very doubtful after the uproar of his Regensburg's comments whether or not he would keep his appointment to visit that Muslim nation. What's drawing him, if you pay attention to what we just played for you? First of all, the head of the seat of Christian Orthodoxy, I'm talking here about Eastern Orthodoxy, is there in Istanbul, the geographical seat, I should say. And this pope, like his predecessor, is anxious to heal the rift that's been in the works for over 1,000 years between the Orthodox and the Western Church. So he's going there to visit the Christians. But it's interesting that the Turkish government said, we want the pope to visit as a head of state and not a religious leader. That's an interesting distinction, isn't it? The big question is, the Muslims in Turkey and the secular government in Turkey can make that distinction. Can the Muslims in the rest of the world make that distinction between Pope as head of state and Pope as religious leader, given the fact that Islam, as far as we can see, does not distinguish between church and state or mosque and state? Turkey's an exception. It may be perhaps the only Islamic nation that the Pope will be able to visit as merely head of state and not religious leader. I wonder if he'll wear his mitre. That's what I want to know. I mean, if he's not going as a religious leader. Tomorrow on Issues, etc., Dorcas, Lydia, Phoebe, these New Testament saints, we'll talk about them with Dr. Peter Scare of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'm Todd Wilkham. Thanks for listening to Issues, etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. You know, pictures can often help teach complex biblical truths. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is a picture book for young children. It's titled The Apostles' Creed, and it's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. Or you can read a detailed description of the Apostles' Creed on our website, issuesetc.org. The cost is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. Our October Book of the Month, The Apostles' Creed.